You're listening to the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and this is the Evan Solomon Show.
Welcome back to the show. We are following a developing story in Beirut, Lebanon, where there's been two massive explosions, maybe thousands of people injured. We're hearing reports that hospitals are having to turn people away. We don't know what caused it. Some reports are suggesting it was a fireworks factory. Some are saying we don't know. I mean, it's massive. We don't know if there's some kind of terror action here. We just don't know. It looks like 9/11 in the sense that the city's just, that downtown area is just leveled. And people are walking through the debris trying to get to hospitals, all bloodied. So we just don't know what the answer is. We're following it. We're desperately trying to reach people there and trying to figure out what's going on. But that's obviously one of the big stories of the day. In the meantime, we are all trying to figure out if there's going to be a vaccine for COVID. Should the kids go back to school in September? And why did the United States defund the WHO? Joining us now, and it's great to have him here, is Dr. Peter Singer. He's a special advisor to the Director General of the WHO. He's the Assistant Director General, and he's joining us now for a little while. First of all, Dr. Singer, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you joining us, and I hope you and the family are doing well.
Thank you, Evan. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
The WHO has been at the forefront of this, and we're going to get to that, the forefront of an enormous amount of criticism and an enormous amount of praise. And I'm going to get to that. But first, let me just start with some questions that some people really want to know. The first question is, the WHO has warned today of an education catastrophe, almost a lost generation because of COVID. There's been a lot of questions about should kids go back to school in September. What is the WHO's position, if any, on that?
Evan, it's really important that local public health officials make local decisions because it's so contextual. But what I would say is that the things that people should look for is community transmission. It's the amount of transmission of COVID that's in the community that will dictate the risk of school reopening. And by lost generation, the reference, of course, is missing out on education for young kids, missing out on stimulation, which is very important to help the brain develop and to help kids develop.
But if you look at Canada, I mean, let's take, you know, British Columbia, Quebec and Ontario, where most of our audience is. There, of course, are listening across the country. But let's take three of those provinces. Quebec, Ontario, BC. Should those provinces, looking at their reproductive factor of this, the infectivity rates, I mean, parents are listening. All we want to know is, should we send our kids back to school? Is it safe? Is it safe to go back to school in September?
Again, Evan, it has to be a local call, but what I would say about Canada is that WHO cited Canada as a country that had a pretty large outbreak and got it under control. It's got good public health leadership. Of course, we had the tragedy in long-term care, and it's a good supporter of the multilateral system on vaccines, on humanitarian. The school decision really has to be a decision for local public health officials.
Okay. Let me talk about the U.S. Our border with the U.S. is still closed to everything but essential travel. If you come from the United States to Canada, you got to quarantine. U.S. President Donald Trump did an interview with Axios, Jonathan Swan, and he brought out a series of graphs. It's an incredible exchange as he keeps bragging that the U.S. is better than any country in the world. Let me just play a clip, and I just want the WO perspective on what we should be looking for. In other words, what's the relevant data so we can judge, because there's so much bloody confusion here. Here's the president of the United States in this Axios interview that's gone viral.
Well, right here, the United States is lowest in numerous categories. We're lower than the world.
Lower than
the
world?
We're lower than
what is that?
Europe.
In what? In what?
Take a look. Right here. Here's case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population.
That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that.
Why can't he do that? I know what the president's saying, Dr. Singer. He's saying that mortality rates after people test positive are low. But the journalist says, okay, but what we're talking about is the number of deaths and number of hospitalizations. What factors should we look at to determine if a country has handled the COVID virus well?
Well, one factor could be the new cases. Of about 220,000 new cases in the last 24 hours, about 47,000 have been in the U.S. That's the second highest number in the world. Another factor could be deaths, which is, of course, sadly, a later indicator. Out of about 18 million deaths in the world, out of about 690,000 deaths in the world, about 154,000 have been in the U.S. It's important to know that the U.S. has very strong science and public health leadership, and that every country can turn around an epidemic through the basics of public health. Individuals, of course, hand washing, physical distancing, wearing masks, don't go to work when you're sick. And in terms of the public health authorities, which is really at the center of this, the testing, the isolation of cases, the tracking and quarantining of contacts.
Yeah, but, and I understand that, but I think the basic question people want to know is, and this has been the political issue there, have they screwed it up in the States? We've got 8,953 deaths here, so I don't want to pretend that we're perfect. We've screwed up a lot as well. There's almost 9,000 people dead here in Canada. But has the U.S. screwed this up? Because we look at places like Arizona, Florida, Texas, there seem to be exploding cases there.
In your clip, the interviewer was asking about deaths per population. In the U.S., it's about 469.5 per million population, the cumulative deaths since this has begun. And just to put that in context, that's almost twice as many deaths as in Canada.
Per capita.
Per million population.
I know you're trying to be as diplomatic as, but that sounds like a screw up to me.
You'll appreciate, Evan, that as an international public servant, we are focused on the facts, and those are the facts that I'm giving you. What I would say is that every country can turn it around, and. And one of the things that's really important is actually sharing good practices from countries around the world. You know, just to take a step back, last Thursday was 6 months since WHO declared a public health emergency of international concern, highest level of global alert. In that 6 months, there have been worldwide 18 million cases, 690,000 deaths, sadly. And generally speaking, those countries that followed WHO guidance did well.
Okay, here's what I want to do. Dr. Peter Singer, Special Advisor to the Director General of the WHO, is going to stay with us. We're going to talk about how the WHO handled this and why a conservative candidate, Derek Sloan, has just put out a message saying he's opposed to mandatory vaccines. Really? We'll get answers on that and lots more. Stay with us on the Evan Solomon Show.
Talking to the newsmakers every day. The conversation continues with Evan Solomon.
Welcome back to the program, everyone. Dr. Peter Singer, the special advisor to the director general of the WHO, who you see on TV all the time. He's the assistant director general. Dr. Peter Singer joins us. Great to have you here as we look at the ongoing six-month fallout here. And Dr. Singer, and I realize that WHO is... a member-driven organization. It's a very difficult, you can't get political about this, but let me just, I want you to comment on some health matters here. Derek Sloan is one of the last four, he could be the leader of the Conservative Party. He's certainly contesting it here, but he believes that Canada is working with a company on a vaccine that's affiliated with China, and that he wouldn't force anybody in Canada ever to have a mandatory vaccine. I'm going to play you a clip of what he's just released today. Here's what he said.
We know that Canada is working with CanSino Biologics, which is a company affiliated with the Communist Party of China. And I wouldn't trust that vaccine, and I would certainly not force a mandatory vaccine on anybody here in Canada.
Not force any mandatory vaccines. First of all, what's your comment on that, Dr. Singer? Do you think if there's a mandatory vaccine for anything, he says for anything he doesn't want to force mandatory vaccines, certainly not for coronavirus, and he says Canada should not be working with CanSino Biologics, a Chinese company, because he doesn't trust them because they're affiliated with the Communist Party of China.
Vaccines are a very, very important thing, obviously. We don't know whether there will be a vaccine and when that will come, but there's a very, very good pipeline, 165 candidates in the pipeline. And that's important because there's only about a 10% success rate. About three or four are in late stage trials. And the one you mentioned is one of them. You know, at the moment, WHO's focus is on two things. One is accelerating the development of vaccines, and secondly, on making sure they're equitably distributed. It's really important that people have confidence in vaccines, of course. And so, you know, to your question, every vaccine should have very rigorous safety and efficacy testing to make sure it's safe and efficacious. And vaccines are, potentially a key exit strategy from this. In the meantime, very important to follow the public health measures I mentioned earlier.
But Dr. Singer, should Canadians have any concern if a vaccine is developed with, let's say, CanSino Biologics? Should Canadians be concerned about that? Because there's a new poll out saying a lot of Canadians they believe in conspiracy theories. One of them is that this was created in a lab in Wuhan by the Chinese and it kind of, quote, got out. That's been widely debunked, but people really believe it. Should there be concerned about any vaccine developed with China?
I think the key issue, Evan, is vaccines are being developed in many countries in the world, and the key issue is the rigorous testing, including by Canadian authorities, to ensure the safety and efficacy of any vaccine. To the more general point, this virus is a new virus. It spreads fast. It's a killer. We're learning every day. Misinformation kills, and Canadians need reliable information from the WHO and from, of course, the federal, provincial, and local public health authorities in Canada, which are doing a very strong job, generally speaking, our public health leaders.
Speaking with Dr. Peter Singer from the WHO, but people aren't, there's a lot of doubt that, quote, the information coming out of the WHO is trustworthy. After all, back in 2005, the WHO adopted the International Health Regulations, which was an agreement that all members had to sign, okay? Which is important because the WHO has to hold its members who pay for it accountable. Critics say that because of that, they can't both put pressure on member countries while essentially being uncritical of places like China. China, when the criticism. When the COVID first broke out in Wuhan, China was arresting doctors. They were silencing doctors. And there is real concern that the WHO overpraised and overtrusted China and the rest of the world is suffering. Can you explain what happened there?
WHO first heard of this virus on December 31st and within days notified all the countries in the world, the public, through January, developed guidance for clinicians, for countries, and supported countries through January. And by January 30th, which is more than 6 months ago now, the Director General issued a public health emergency of international concern. That's our highest level of global alert. He did it at a time when there were fewer than 100 cases and zero deaths outside China. And in that six-month period that's followed, the countries that followed the guidance tended to do well. In addition to that warning, WHO has shipped tens of millions of pieces of personal protective equipment around the world. It has trained millions of health workers, and it has significantly worked with partners and is helping to accelerate a vaccine and ensure it's fairly distributed. Having said all that, you know, criticism goes with the territory. We welcome and embrace feedback. And in fact, the Director General announced at the World Health Assembly in May, and the all the states, all the member states in the world endorsed a review of the international response, including but not limited to WHO's performance.
But Dr. Singh, I think, if I may interrupt, I understand that I know the timeline. December 31st, you get this Chinese authorities, and they locked down Wuhan, and I appreciate that, although I think they delayed that, that we know now. There's lots of criticism about how they silence whistleblowers. But why in late January did the director general of the WHO say, quote, there is no reason for measures that unnecessarily interfere with international travel and trade? When they didn't do that, you know, some countries like New Zealand and even Taiwan ignored that advice, and they fared really well. This is the problem when you're not warning about masks, not saying closing borders wasn't necessary. Those were mistakes. And a lot of people blame that on the WHO. Canada followed that advice. Lives were lost. Economic catastrophe. Was that a mistake for the director general to say, don't close the borders? It looks like it in retrospect that he overtrusted the Chinese on that.
Again, you know, the time for a review, not only of WHO, but also of the performance of every country in the world that will want to do this, is when the fire is dying down and the fire is still blazing. And we welcome the review that's been announced. Having said that, you pointed out that the on the travel issue specifically, which is your question, every country in the world agreed to the international health regulations. And what WHO did was follow them. And so there will be a review of the international health regulations as well. But the main point I want to make about travel is, and the director general said this yesterday, there's no silver bullet. It's not anything individually, masks, travel, physical distancing. It's do it all. And that was his guidance. That was WHO's guidance. And the countries that did it all, generally speaking, did well. And
late. Like, here in Canada, there was a mixed message. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. The closing borders doesn't work, and then it does work. Wearing a mask won't protect you unless it's N95, then it does. I got to tell you, Doc, I was confused. Everybody was confused.
To your point of messaging, this is a new virus. It spreads fast. It's a killer, and we're learning every day. So you would expect, as the science evolves, for the messaging to evolve, the public health messaging. That's what you want. WHO is a strongly scientifically based, evidence-based organization, and its advice has saved many, many lives around the world. And again, you just have to look at the numbers, Evan, of the outcomes of different countries. And generally speaking, the countries that followed WHO's advice did well. And I've seen this up close, and I'm proud of the
I'm not suggesting they didn't. To be candid, the countries that followed, that went their own way, like New Zealand and South Korea, did better. But Dr. Peter Singer, your time is incredibly valuable. I appreciate it. We've got to take a short break. I'm going to get some audience reaction to this next.
When important decisions are made, we report. Here's Evan Solomon.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. So we just had Dr. Peter Singer from the WHO on. And coming up, maybe the interview I'm most excited about, the New Hampshire representative, a guy named Steve Smith. Guess why? New Hampshire's the first state to legalize flying cars. It's called the Jetsons Bill. They're really doing that. The flying car. We're going to talk to him in a minute. Yeah, the Jetsons. Remember the Jetsons? The governor of New Hampshire basically says this bill that you can basically use the roads for flying. Okay. But let me just whip back to the COVID crisis. What do you think of the WHO's response to the pandemic? You could talk to me about that. Or this has just emerged. Should vaccines be mandatory? And will you get a COVID-19 vaccine if there's one approved? Here's my answer. Yes. Vaccines should be mandatory. You know my position. I have zero time for anti-vaxxers. Not that I'm not interested in data. There's just no data. It's garbage. It's dangerous. You want a condemnation of what life is like with no vaccines? COVID-19. People die. The idiot anti-vaxxers out there that won't vaccinate. This is what the world's like when you don't have vaccine. This is just the COVID world, but you don't have vaccines for other things. This would be all sorts of things. Measles, mumps. Come on. And then you get a guy like Derek Sloan, who could be the next leader of the Conservative Party, although I doubt he will, but he's in the final four, and he's just put out this tweet, just like it mind boggles me, sowing doubts that if a vaccine was created in China, you should never do it. But in general, he would never make vaccines universal. So I'm going to give you the number. First of all, would you get a COVID-19 vaccine? Do you think vaccines in general should be mandatory? 1-855-633-1010, 1-855-633-1010, or text me at 71010. Text me at 71010. Here's Derek Sloan.
I wouldn't trust that vaccine, and I would certainly not force a mandatory vaccine on anybody here in Canada.
Yeah, you wouldn't force a vaccine on Canada. Now he's saying two different things. One, he doesn't want any vaccine to be forced if it's made in China for COVID. But then in general, he seems to say that he doesn't like any. He would not enforce any mandatory vaccines. Mr. Sloan, you have every right to your opinion. You're not a doctor. This is a dangerous view. I've spoken to doctors repeatedly. In fact, I just spoke to the Dr. Peter Singer. Vaccines save lives. I know there's anti-vaxxers out there who are going to point me to some study. I've seen it. I've done this story a million times. We have tested vaccines on billions and billions of people. It works. You want a world without vaccines? You're living in one. This is the world with no vaccine for an illness called COVID-19. It sucks. It's economically devastating. It's devastating on your health. How do people now, in the midst of this, how do you become an anti-vaxxer? Joe, you're on the line. Joe, what did you think about the doctor on the WHO?
Well, he didn't really answer the tough questions. I mean, the easy ones are fine, but like Justin Trudeau, when you ask him a tough question, he just goes to talking points. And they made mistakes. You tried to get him to admit that, but I can't believe that they won't admit that they made a lot of early mistakes, and some basic ones about not wearing a mask and you don't have to ban travel. And it was that you were playing the clips and he was denying it. And it's just kind of crazy that these kind of people live in a world where they can't admit that they made mistakes. And we're not doctors. You're not a doctor. I'm not a doctor, but we can see mistakes are made. We're not going to hang them or put them in jail. We're just telling them, admit you made a mistake and let's move on with what we're going to do in the future. And how can you trust somebody that cannot admit they made mistakes? Like Trudeau, who will never admit that he's made a mistake on blackface or SNC or any of his other scandals, including the Wii scandal now, where he's ruining donations to charities, because who can trust a charity anymore? Because the one picked by our government seems to be the most corrupt of all. So
let me just unpack a few things.
Can't admit they made mistakes.
First of all, you're making a lot of great points on the fact that the WHO does not admit they made a mistake. I sing it, brother. I agree with you. They made mistakes. They were late on travel. Late on. Was it a new virus? Yes, but we had the experience with SARS. New Zealand's chief of public health knew that. Taiwan, South Korea, they ignored the WHO's lead. They chose their own way. They had better results. Did they screw up? Yes. The reason that I mentioned the fact that in 2005, the WHO signed this health accord is that the WHO has to beg for funds from its member countries and then hold them accountable as well. Well, how the hell do you hold a country accountable like China when you need their money? That's why they can't do it very well. You can't chastise China for failing to be a good country and transparent on WHO on the virus when you also have to make sure that they participate and give you money. It's a conflict. And at the heart of that, it means that in a pandemic, it's compromised the WHO. I agree with you. They should admit their mistakes. That's an absolutely great point. And if they admitted that they were too slow, we would trust them more now. I actually still think we need the WHO. I think we should trust the WHO, not uncritically, but they do great work. We need the WHO. I think it's a major mistake for the U.S. to defund it. Major geopolitical mistake and a health mistake. But that doesn't mean that I believe the WHO has been perfect. They haven't. And Joe's made a great point there. John, what's up?
Yeah, 2 points. You know, the WHO, it was airborne, and it wasn't airborne. Then it was airborne. It can't live on surfaces. Then it can live on surfaces. So there was a lot of mistakes made. But the politicians just all got in line and abrogated their responsibility by saying it was very easy. Well, I'm taking the advice of the doctors. Okay, we can't be, you know, the reason that those countries that you named, Taiwan, New Zealand, all these places, they're in the proximity of China. They know not to trust China. And you hit it on the head. The World Health Organization has to beg for money from countries and then hold them responsible. It can be done. On the other point about vaccines, I've had every vaccine that I can get. I will wait until you and others take the vaccine when it comes to COVID, because they are pushing this through so fast, there's got to be a lot of questions answered on it before I take it.
You know, first of all, great call. You're right that they're pushing this fast. I think if it's gone through the right protocols, and then I will take it, because, man, we need to get this damn thing over with. But I hope they get it. I hope they do. There's over 160 possibilities in the pipeline. But that's a great call. We should be cautious. Thanks for the call, John. John's waiting for me to take it. That's okay, John. I'm going to take it. I have no problem with that. But I will be due diligence on it. I want to make sure it's the right thing. But it's going to be tough to get. Just to get access to it for people like you and I is going to be tough. All right, I think we've reached someone on the ground in Beirut. Okay, this is a really big story. Massive explosion there. We may go live next. Hang in there. We'll see.
Evan Solomon Show is brought to you by TheraBreath Mouthwash and Toothpaste. Find a store near you at TheraBreathCanada.com.
Welcome back to the show. Okay, look, I promised you that I'd get to this flying car story, but I'm going to delay it till tomorrow. And I'll tell you why. Even though New Hampshire has the Jetson bill, and we've got the person behind this would you fly a flying car? I really want to get there. But in the meantime, we have finally reached someone on the ground in Beirut. And I'm just, her name is Aya Majzoub. She's a Lebanon researcher at the Human Rights Watch. She's on the ground. Two massive explosions in the port of Beirut. The city looks like it's been devastated by a bomb, and Aya is on the line. And I really want to get to this. Aya, first of all, I hope you are and your loved ones are okay. Can you give us a description of what has happened? Where are you? What's going on the ground in Beirut, Lebanon?
Yeah, so I was at home when the explosion happened. I live in Canada, which is about 4 kilometers away from where the explosion happened. Oh, sorry, there are ambulances all around me. At first, there was it felt like an earthquake across the building, and then a few seconds after that, there was a huge blast, and blast shattered in my apartment and in some of the buildings around me. There was extensive damage to cars and shops. in the Hamra area, which again is around 4 kilometers away from the site of the explosion. But that's how strong the explosion was.
4 kilometers away around, and your apartment and cars are destroyed. Are you seeing people wounded?
Light wounds where I was. Just people injured from objects falling on them from glass and from doors falling. But closer to the explosion, I mean, the damage and the injuries are absolutely horrific. Already hundreds of people have been transported to hospitals in Beirut are nearing capacity. Dozens are still trapped under the rubble. We've heard of, the local reports have said at least 10 people have been confirmed dead. But that's, I mean, we've yet to see the real scale of the damage. But walking around the neighborhoods in Beirut, I mean, buildings have collapsed, glass everywhere. It's a humanitarian disaster.
Yeah, CTV News is also saying at least 10 people dead, but we're very early days yet. The cause is being speculated. We don't know. Some are saying it was a fireworks, but some are saying it may be an ammunition factory for Hezbollah. I don't know. These are unconfirmed reports, and we've got to be very careful. What are you hearing?
Exactly. I mean, there have been many rumors flying around, but nothing that's confirmed yet. So we'd rather not speculate at this point.
I could tell you this. There's no way the damage, this looks like a fireworks explosion, and we've seen that before. This looks like a bomb. I mean, give us a sense. Like, you're 4 kilometers away. So is Beirut, like, closer to the epicenter near the port? Is it leveled?
Some parts of Beirut are rubble, yes. Some buildings have collapsed. The scenes are just absolutely catastrophic. And what we're really worried about is the ability of hospitals to respond to this crisis. So we've, as Human Rights Watch, we've been warning since December of a hospital crisis. The government has not been paying the hospitals their dues, so hospitals aren't able to pay their staff or pay for medical supplies. Medical importers have been facing very, very severe restrictions on transferring money outside of the country, so they haven't been able to import basic medical supplies and medical equipment, things like blood bags, things like kidney filters, dialysis filters, catheters. So hospitals' capacity to respond to these kinds of emergencies was already weakened by the economic crisis in Lebanon. And then we had COVID-19 on top of that, which just really stretched the capacity of the hospitals very thin. A couple of weeks ago, private hospitals have said that they were shutting their doors to any non-emergency procedures because they just couldn't cope. Just this morning, the main COVID treatment center, a public hospital in Lebanon, said that it was nearing capacity and pretty soon it wasn't going to be able to accept any patients anymore. And then after that, this unimaginable catastrophe in Lebanon that has left hundreds of people injured and in need of medical care. I mean, the situation really is quite catastrophic.
And people here may not appreciate the political situation. It's already very fragile there. And as you say, the health situation is already very fragile, the economic situation, and now this explosion. We don't know the cause of the blast. But my God, I mean, can you, from your window, Aya, can you see the smoke still?
Not anymore. I can't see the smoke from my window anymore, but it did last a very long time. And it was pink smoke rising from the scene of the explosion. I haven't seen anything like this before.
No. And you're 4 kilometers away, which is astonishing. Will you try to make your way down to see what's going on, or is it just shelter in place?
I need to go check on my family and friends, some of whom have been injured in the blast.
They have. Gosh, we're praying for you, and we hope everyone's well. This is a devastating blow. Aya Majoub, Lebanon researcher at Human Rights Watch, on the ground there, far away from the epicenter, but your apartment, windows blowing out, cars blowing out, ambulances everywhere. Aya, take good care. It's a very volatile moment, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate your time. And we wish you and
you
are safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Let me play you an ABC report from Tom Rivers with the latest details on the explosion. Listen to this.
A massive explosion has shaken Lebanon's capital, causing widespread damage. The blast appeared to be centered around Beirut's port and has caused wide-scale destruction and shattered windows miles away. Thick smoke billowed through the center of the city.
The thick smoke billowing masked the damage. This is the story. I don't know what it is. I don't know the cause. Nobody does yet. But these double blasts are so massive. I mean, I think about the Halifax explosion, 1917, that blew apart that city that we still talk about more than, you know, obviously more than 100 years later. You think of 9/11. Now, I don't know if this is a terror attack or an accident. I don't know if it's a, what caused this blast in the port. We just don't know. The rumors are flying, and you've got to be bloody careful about this. But what we do know now is that a major city in the world is in serious jeopardy now. The blast that has leveled downtown Beirut is going to have a fallout that will go on. Now, I should say this, because of the geopolitics there. These are important issues. Hezbollah has denied that it has anything to do with them. Israel has denied it has anything to do with them. I say this because they fought wars. But what could cause this kind of blast? You heard that Aya, who's 4 kilometers away, is saying windows all around her, including her own apartment, blown out. 4 kilometers from the ground zero blast. Incredible. The picture's coming out of Beirut, so we're going to follow that very closely. Now, before I go, I did promise you again that we were going to have this New Hampshire representative, Steve Smith, on the report of flying calls. He's going to be booked tomorrow now. He's going to return to us tomorrow. Look, whenever there's news that breaks like this Lebanon situation, we're going to cover this, as you know. But and you're going to read about this and hear about this and watch this explosion. But we will talk about registering your flying car in the Jetsons bill. Is this coming to Canada soon? All that's tomorrow, the Jetsons bill. Great to be back. Thanks for your comments. And we'll talk again in a very short while, 22 hours.